This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross.
And now, the courageous, the curvaceous Premix!
It's the Dreamix! The Dreamix!
Move, move, move right out of my life. Move, move, move right out of my life.
You better move.
The new film adaptation of the 1981 Broadway musical Dreamgirls is one of the big holiday movies this year. Reviewing it in The New Yorker, David Denby wrote, "A great movie musical has been made at last." Dreamgirls is set in the 60s and is loosely based on the story of the Supremes and Berry Gordy, who founded the Motown record label. The character closest to Diana Ross, Dina, is played by Beyoncé Knowles. But the actress getting the most attention in the film is Jennifer Hudson. She just won this year's New York Film Critics Circle Award for Best Supporting Actress for her portrayal of Effie. Effie is the original lead singer of the Dreamgirls and has a powerful gospel-tinged singing style. But when the Dreamgirls producer decides to take them in a more pop direction, Dina becomes lead, and Effie is eventually forced out. Eddie Murphy plays a singer who is a composite of rhythm and blues singers of the period. The Dreamgirls get their start as his backup singers. My guest is the director and screenwriter of this new movie, Bill Condon. He also wrote the screen adaptation of the musical Chicago, and he wrote and directed the films Kinsey and Gods and Monsters. Bill Condon, welcome back to Fresh Air. When did you first see the show, and what did it mean to you?
Oh, man, I saw it on opening night with a group of friends. We were in the back row, and what drew me there was a combination of you know, a lifelong interest in the Supremes with a real kind of just complete kind of fan adoration of Michael Bennett. You know, I'd grown up in New York.
And I should say he choreographed and directed the original Dreamgirls.
That's right. And, you know, had come up as a choreographer on shows like Company and Follies. And obviously Chorus Line had been his big breakthrough. And Dreamgirls was two shows after that. So it was the combination of those two things that got me there. And then, of course, being in that theater that night, an incredible sort of historic, you know, performance from Jennifer Holliday.
Now, Michael Bennett passed away in 87, so he wasn't around to talk to about the original adaptation. But
no.
David Geffen was one of the producers of the movie.
That's right.
And he was also one of the producers of the original show. And you were able to talk to him. In fact, you needed his blessing and his backing
Correct, in order to do it.
From what I've read, it sounded like he had originally wanted to do a film adaptation of Dreamgirls, and then he decided it wouldn't work. He wasn't happy with the film adaptation of A Chorus Line. Mm-hmm. But you had to convince him to actually go through with a film adaptation. What did you tell him to try to get him enthusiastic about your version of this?
Well, I think for one thing, you know, I think he sees himself as the protector of the legacy of Michael Bennett. Michael's not around anymore. And as you said, you know, there have been other adaptations of musicals that kind of tarnish the reputation of the original material. And when we got together, and first of all, I was just describing my sense of the show. You know, when you really get inside this, you realize that everything happens either on a stage or very close to a stage. And my feeling is that paradoxically, things can become more cinematic by remaining true to their theatrical roots. You know, often in movies, people do things just because you can. A good example is the Chorus Line movie, you know, which on stage, the power comes from the fact that it's happening in real time in that theater during those 2 hours, you know. On film, the movie starts with one of the lead characters crossing the 59th Street Bridge, and it's a huge helicopter shot of the bridge, you know. Kind of things that movies can do, but the you know, I don't know that anyone asked the question why, you know, that sort of opening up just for the sake of it seemed to me a wrong approach with Dreamgirls. That in a way, let's, you know, you take the character played by Eddie Murphy, you know, we don't really want to see where he lives. You know, we don't want to see him sort of watching TV and cracking open a beer. He's a guy who lives on a stage, basically. And when he's not on a stage, he's on a tour bus going to the next gig, you know. So it was that kind of thing, really, really kind of staying true to the theatricality of the show, I think.
Now let's talk about the casting. Jennifer Hudson, who plays the character of Effie, and she's the character who's kicked out of the group because, well, for about three reasons. One is that she's not pop enough. She sounds like too black for the producer's taste. Two, she's not gorgeous. She's heavy, and that's no good.
Yes.
And three is that she's real temperamental, and you know, she's
difficult. Yeah,
she's difficult. Yes. So you cast Jennifer Hudson in the part, and as everyone knows now, Jennifer Hudson was one of the people who had been on American Idol the year Fantasia Barrino won, and she got into the top 10, I think.
She did.
Yeah. So apparently for the auditions, you chose her, or you and the casting director chose her from nearly 800 people. What were the auditions like? Like, what did you have them do? And as I think everybody knows, like, the showstopper here is this huge, it's like a huge number that she does in this you know, really big voice, and it's got to be big. So what did you do to get a sense of how big everybody can get and how convincing they could be getting that big?
Well, first of all, it was a very long process. It took place over 6 months because it felt as if, you know, obviously that number is the great mountain to climb here. And I really wanted to feel at the end of it that we'd seen that we had a real open door policy. Everyone who woke up in the morning, looked in the mirror and said, I could play Effie in that movie, was given a chance, you know, to show what she had. One thing I didn't let anybody do on their first audition was the song, you know, And I'm Telling You. Jennifer, in a very kind of clever way, sang a song from Hair, Easy to Be Hard, as though it were And I'm Telling You, which I thought was really, really got the idea across. But, you know, it's a song that is, everybody tries it, and it just felt as if, let's see what qualities each woman has, and then, you know, I wanted to work with them before they actually attempted And I'm Telling You. So we did hear a lot of Amazing Grace and a lot of Home from the Wiz, you know, but it was really valuable to do it that way, you know, and it's fascinating, you know. There are brilliant people who just don't register on film, you know, that, you know, even on tape, you get that sense. And there are wonderful actresses who came in who just couldn't really convince you that, you know, when Effie says, I've got the voice, that it was true, you know. So very quickly, as often tends to be the case, what seems like an endless list really sort of narrows itself down to about, in this case, about 10 people. And for those, then I brought them to Los Angeles and did full-on screen tests with rehearsals and costume and makeup and hair and all of that. And that's really where Jennifer emerged.
Well, let's hear Jennifer Hudson singing an excerpt of The Showstopper from Dreamgirls. That's Jennifer Hudson from the soundtrack of Dreamgirls. My guest, Bill Condon, directed this adaptation for the screen. Did you see Jennifer Hudson's familiarity because of American Idol as being a benefit or a liability? I mean, for some people, American Idol is a great show and they'd want to see somebody who was on it. And for other people, it's like very inauthentic and it would be a liability.
Yep. I think neither, honestly. It really was about finding the right person. It was the fact that you know, I think there were probably moments in the beginning when it felt as if it were maybe a liability because there seemed to be something too obvious about casting someone from that show in this part and the parallels, you know. But it really was, you know, I was so desperate to find the exact right woman that I kind of put all that aside. And the same is true of Beyonce, frankly. You know, it turns out there are obvious parallels between her life and Dina Jones, but they are beside the point.
I'm glad you brought up Beyonce. How did you cast her? Did you know from the start that she'd be the star that helps get the movie made because she is a star and it's easier to get backing that way?
Not really. You know, everyone went into this with the same thought. First of all, the first meeting I had with David Geffen, I talked about Eddie Murphy and Jamie Foxx as being the two people that I had in mind and loved to go after, you know. And I think people felt they were the big stars in terms of movies. And everyone was very comfortable with the idea that all the dreams would be unknowns. But Beyonce expressed a strong interest in doing it. I met with her, adored her. You know, she is just, you know, in addition to everything else, just incredibly sweet and down to earth and an amazing hard worker. But I wasn't sure that she was Dina, you know, so I did ask her to do a screen test. For me, the issues were, first of all, often when someone has such a, like, you know, a well-developed stage persona, it's hard for them to shed that. I think, you know, we can think of all the great singer-actresses in movie history who sort of do one thing, you know, and do it beautifully. And you know, if you just take one aspect of that, the kind of powerful sexuality that she expresses on a stage, that's so different from anything to do with either the 60s and certainly the Dina Jones, the sort of idea of almost imitating and embodying the prevailing kind of sexual mores of the time in the white world. The sort of Marilyn Monroe, Kim Novak, kittenish idea was very different from anything that Beyoncé does now. So I wanted to see her perform a number. And then also, obviously, this represented a bigger acting challenge than she'd ever taken on before. So we went to New York. We did that screen test. I worked with her a little again. And she was just, she had it.
When someone is singing in the musical, in the movie version of it, are they lip-syncing to a track that they previously recorded in the studio? In other words, when we see them singing on screen, are they lip-syncing to, like, the perfect take that they already did in the recording studio?
Yes and no. They are lip-syncing to a track, and the reason for that is simply it's a technical thing, and it started, you know, when movie musicals started being made, which is basically that it's impossible to cut from angle to angle without having, you know, if the tempo and the delivery of each little bit changes from cut to cut, you know, so you've got to have some guide that allows you to make those cuts. But each of these actors sang full on. If you look at it, and I'm telling you, it was interesting. I always planned to do that at the end of the movie because I wanted Jennifer to be so immersed in the character of Effie and really, you know, be as comfortable and know her as well as possible. But the idea was to shoot it over a day or a day and a half, and it wound up taking almost a week because Jennifer sang that song full out, and after 3 or 4 hours, her voice was shot and she couldn't do it anymore. Being, you know, such a natural performer, once her voice was gone, she couldn't just stand there and lip sync and pretend, you know, with her face. It all had to come from deep inside her. And that was true of all the actors here. So although there was this guide track, everyone was singing full on and live when we were shooting it.
I think it's fair to say that Dreamgirls, the show, and Diana Ross, the person, have had really big gay followings.
Absolutely.
Is that something you feel like you can explain?
I certainly can explain it with the show, you know, and it was interesting because to make a film of this, the show had to kind of live up to and do justice to the Motown movement, and the movie has to do justice to that and Dreamgirls itself. And as you say, this is a show that has meant a lot to African-American audiences and gay audiences. And I think, you know, I know my own personal connection to it. It really is about being someone who is marginalized, stepping into the mainstream, and the challenge, especially then, and I, you know, of doing that without betraying your authentic self, you know. And let's face it, Dreamgirls really was right at the moment of the gay movement and sort of gay liberation, frankly, you know, and it was one of the touchstones of that movement, I think. So I think more than anything, it's that I still do connect to.
My guest is Bill Condon. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. We're talking with Bill Condon. He wrote and directed the new movie Dreamgirls. He also wrote the screenplay for the film adaptation of the musical Chicago. We know one of the things about the movie adaptation of Chicago is that several of the leads really weren't singers, but they were coached a lot for the roles and sang, you know, really pretty convincingly
for
the movie. And one of the people who worked on that also worked behind the scenes on Dreamgirls. I'm thinking of Paul Bogave.
Yes.
But, you know, Eddie Murphy, for instance, he had that big hit, My Girl Wants to Party All the Time, but he's not like a singer. And yet he has to play a singer in this and put some songs across in different styles. So what kind of work did you want to do with him to make him as convincing as you could in the role?
Yeah. First of all, when I first met with Eddie at lunch, I was excited to hear that he knew Dreamgirls very well. He'd seen it 3 or 4 times and he knew the score and he felt that he could sing it. And also he has a great interest in Jackie Wilson and James Brown and Wilson Pickett. You know, so
well,
this is
something James Brown on Saturday Night Live.
Well, exactly. Yeah. I know. Hot tub. Yeah. But this is his music. He considers it his music. So I think he sort of had been training for most of his life for this, frankly, you know. But, you know, the thing with Eddie is that he can give it to you in 10 different ways, you know, almost imitating different kinds of sounds. But the point was to find the James Thunder early that was going to be him. And I think that took him a little while and relaxing to really just trust his own voice, which has beautiful tone and real power.
And were you concerned at all that he does a kind of James Brown-like performance in part of the film?
Yeah.
And of course, you don't want that to look like his parody of James Brown on Saturday
No.
Night Live. Well, was it ever going to be a problem kind of sorting out the two?
We both were on the same page about that, that he didn't ever want, nor did I, you know, Eddie Murphy peeking out from behind this character. It's funny, you know, in recent years, we've seen him do a lot of brilliant work with, Rick Baker, the makeup artist, and a lot of prosthetic work. But Sharon Davis, the costume designer who'd done The Nutty Professor and worked with him before, said that he does always feel a little more comfortable, a little less exposed if he has something like that. And it was her idea that we make a prosthetic, and he was totally into this, that we make, that we give him two new front teeth, because part of Eddie's smile is that gap between the two front teeth. And just that little thing and putting it in gave him a kind of sexiness, you know, frankly, that I think he's very rarely expressed on the screen. And let's face it, you know, music is so connected to sex that I think that's where he started to lose the Eddie that we know and started to be less about parody.
What's your favorite of his performances in the film?
But yeah, I would say the first one, Fake Your Way. I just think, you know, he comes on the screen and lifts the movie, I think, because he's a movie star playing a star. And then that essential thing in all musicals, which is just the expression of joy in performing, I find that very magical.
Oh, why don't we hear it? This is Eddie Murphy from Dreamgirls.
13 years of solid gold platters. Rising costs and cocktail chatter. Fat DJ, stereophonic sound. Oh, baby, the game of hits goes around and around. But you can fake your way to the top. Round and around.
Try that part right there, baby.
Round and around.
Fake your way to the top.
Round and around.
Yeah, you fell right in there, didn't you, sweetheart?
You can fake your way to the top.
Round and around.
Well, I knew you'd have it.
But it's always real.
Eddie Murphy from Dreamgirls, and my guest is Bill Condon, who wrote and directed the new screen adaptation. You know, as you've pointed out, Dreamgirls, the show, was had a quite an African-American following, and it's almost completely an African-American cast. And mm-hmm. I wonder if there were any moments that made you uncomfortable, you know, being white and directing an African-American cast, particularly when part of the story is about what is authentic and what is, you know,
yeah.
authentic black music as opposed to
sure.
a kind of music that's, you know, altered to appeal to a white audience and so on.
Yeah. No, it's a legitimate question. Every movie's collaborative, but this one especially. Jamie Foxx and Beyoncé Knowles, for example, will know more about the music business than I ever will. So, I mean, I felt a real urge to seek them out almost for research as well as anything else. But I think, you know, the crucial thing is that you've got to connect with something on such a deep level that you know it in your bones. Otherwise, no matter what material you're dealing with, and that's how I felt here, you know, Dreamgirls, the movie, happened because I went after it. You know, it's been sitting there, and it's not as though there were a list and there were some African-American directors and white directors, and they chose the white guy. You know, it was because this was sort of a passion bordering on obsession to make this movie. And I think when you come from that place of a deep connection to it, and we've talked about, you know, as a gay man, a different sort of level of connection I have, I think then, you know, it all turns out all right, you know? And certainly, I have to say that any anxiety I felt was completely kind of assuaged right from the beginning by Jamie Foxx and everybody in the cast.
Well, Bill Condon, thanks for talking with us again. Pleasure to have you back on our show.
Thanks for having me again.
Bill Condon wrote and directed the new film adaptation of the Broadway musical Dreamgirls. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air. Dream.